Did you guys feel hypnotized by that? Yeah, we always have some really good bumper videos here. Okay, I'll tell you that right now. If you want to be entertained by some of that stuff, you just come and watch our sermon videos. It's pretty awesome. But hey, my name's Carter, and I'm one of the pastors here. If we haven't met, I'm so thankful that you're here with us today. We are starting a new teaching series today called Relationship Goals. But before we get into that, I do want to celebrate the fact that we had 10 people at Starting Point. Can we just celebrate that together today? That's awesome for us because that means that's 10 people that are now connected to our church. They came for on-ramp this morning to get into a serve team, and they're in a community group or a DNA group, or they're starting to give, or they're going to live on mission together with us. And so we're really thankful for Starting Point. I would really encourage you to come to one, the next one being March 28th, as Rich said a few minutes ago. And so, man, sign up for that and join us for that if you want to learn more about who we are, the mission that we're on, our values, the vision that we have, all of it, how to get connected here. We want to invite you to that. So that's the first thing. But let's get into our teaching series for today, Relationship Goals. And we're going to go to a text that I would call foundational for us as a church. And so it's a text that we'll probably come back to over the years because it is so foundational for us. We're going to be studying Genesis chapter 1, if you want to turn there or find it on your Bible app. And it's pretty easy to find. It's literally the first one in the book, okay? So it's not hard there. But, you know, this is foundational for us, and it may be surprising that we're going to do a survey, really, in Genesis chapters 1 through 3 here in this series, because Genesis teaches us so much about relationships, but especially the foundation of what it means to have all the relationships that we have in our life. So from the very beginning, God made us relational beings, and it's part of our nature to be in relationship with others, is it not? Yet, relating to other people, at least in a healthy way, is probably one of the hardest things for every one of us in this room, right? Relationships can be hard. And every year I make a point to do a relationship series because the relationship crisis that we're in today is only getting worse and worse over time. You know, we've talked about this before. You've heard me cite articles about how we're in the loneliest moment in human history, at least in the Western world. We're more connected now than we've ever been via technology, phones, social media, all of that. And yet, we're more lonelier. Is that a word? Is that a way to say it? We're lonelier than we've ever been in the history of humanity at some level. People having anxiety problems, people feeling distant and alone. I mean, we're seeing this play out in marriages. More divorces of people who've gotten married are happening than ever happened before. Less people actually getting married than ever before. I mean, people generally feel friendless. They feel alone. They feel isolated. And I could go on and on with that. What's the problem? That's the question. We all know there's an issue here with our relationships, but what is it? What is the problem? What's at the root of the issue here? Why is it such a struggle to relate to other people in a healthy way? What's making us feel more lonely? What's making us feel more isolated? Those are obviously big existential questions that we're probably not going to be able to tackle every, you know, detail here today. It's probably no simple answer. It's probably a very complex issue, you know. But I'd say at least a major component is what we hope to get out of our relationships today, what we're actually looking for. What's our goals in our relationships? They've shifted culturally. The culture has given us something, sold us a bill of goods, if you want to put it that way, which are not true, about relationships. And I think it's what we're trying to get out of the relationships that's changed. What's our target? What's the goal? Is it to love and serve others? Or is it to have them love and serve us? What's the goal? Because we live in a time and a place where personal freedom and autonomy is held up as the most important characteristic of being happy and living a life well lived. All you need to feel fulfilled is freedom from the shackles of difficult people. You know, you got to distance yourself from relationships right now in our culture. Everybody's toxic. There's toxic people everywhere. Toxic person here, toxic person at work, toxic person in my family. Everybody, we get labeled, we got to stay away from toxic people. Have you ever thought that maybe the one who's calling everybody else toxic might be the toxic person themselves? Have you ever thought that? Is that not toxic? To call everybody else toxic? Sounds a little toxic to me, you know? I mean, it's just kind of crazy. That's the culture that we live in right now. It's probably what's killing our relationships the most because we're actually created for community and it does require us to give up certain autonomies in our life, certain freedoms. We have to lay ourselves down and serve others at times in relationships if we're going to have some. So to get there, we got to start at the foundation. We got to start where those good relationships actually begin. Our goals have to shift from something that's selfish gain to something where we can pour out for others. And we see that it actually all starts with a relationship that we have with our Creator God. So here's going to be our main point for today if you're taking notes. Our relationship with God is the foundation of our relationship with others. That's where it all begins. Our relationship with God is the foundation that we have for all other relationships in our life. God wants good relationships for us. He's created us for relationships, but it starts with the relationship that he made for us to have with him. We'll get to some other relationships in the series, of course, here's sexual and non-sexual relationships alike as we talk through this. But it all starts with and is founded on how we relate to God first in a spiritual sense, in a holistic sense, in an eternal sense. My college major was in architecture for Virginia Tech. Some of you guys might know that. So my mind immediately goes to the idea of a foundation as a good illustration for us here in this. One of our community group leaders this week, Chase, he told me about how when he went to Turkey for some relief efforts after the big earthquake they had a few years ago back in 2023, he came across this neighborhood in one of the cities, and they called it the center of destruction because it's where the epicenter of the earthquake began, and everything was devastated, just rubble everywhere. Every building was reduced to rubble, and you can see all the rubble around, except there were two buildings in that neighborhood, and the neighborhood's like as big as Roanoke City, okay? So these aren't like small neighborhoods in these places. There's only two buildings in that neighborhood that were not touched by the earthquake. It was the Chamber of Architects building and the Chamber of Civil Engineers building. I only got a picture of one. Chase sent me this. It's standing in the midst of the rubble. Why was that? Well, all the other buildings were built pretty poorly. That's really what it was. And these two buildings, the Chamber of Architects and the Chamber of Civil Engineers buildings, were built correctly on solid foundations. Even in the midst of the worst storms, the worst earthquake, you've got buildings that stood that test because of their foundations. So if you want your relationships to thrive and you want to learn how to love others better and build healthier relationships that stand the test of time, man, it starts with the right foundation. Our relationship with God is the foundation of our relationship with others. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 1 here, and we'll see how this plays out for us. I want to read this first verse in Genesis, and then we'll skip ahead to the sixth day of creation. But let's read the first verse first and make sure that we have a good foundation for what we believe here and what we're understanding in this chapter of Genesis. Here we go. This is what it says. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There it is. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. I think that's probably one of the most well-known verses in the entire Bible. Usually people can quote one of two verses in the Bible. It's John 3:16 or it's this one, you know. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And I want to start here before we do anything else because we have to recognize that it's God's party, not ours. And so you can write it like this. It's God's creation, not ours. Very simple, very straightforward, very important, very foundational. It's God's creation, not ours. This is what the Bible teaches, and it's what we believe. God created the entire universe and everything in it, all the laws that govern it, space, time, and matter, which means he's in charge of it all, and he sustains it all, and it's all for him. We're not the ones in charge. God is. It's his party. You know how it goes if you have kids. If you've ever seen this with kids in a birthday party, inevitably, it's going to be an older kid's birthday party, and the younger one comes along, and they're trying to do what? Open all the presents, stick their finger in the icing and eat the cake before everybody else. They're trying to take the toys after they've been opened and play with them, even though it's the older kid's birthday and they want to play with the toys they just got, right? What do you have to do with the younger kid? You have to say, hey, it's not your party, right? I've had to do this 3 times, okay? At least. It's not your party. We have to defer to the one whose party it is. We have to learn to defer to God because it's his party. He gets to define how everything works in the world because it's his creation, but especially our relationships. He's created everything, including us, to be relational beings, so he gets to define it. In the beginning, God, not in the beginning, you and me, not in the beginning, us. We weren't there. We can't fathom how it all happened. We don't know how it works today. I mean, I love talking about this kind of stuff. I read and listen to scientific philosophy every once in a while. It doesn't mean I'm smart. It just means I'm very interested. I've got learner in my top 5 strengths, and it just feeds and fuels the learner, okay? I love learning stuff like this. And I'll look this stuff up all the time. You understand that people don't know, the top physicists in the world for history don't understand how gravity works. It's one of the most fundamental characteristics of the universe. We don't know how it works. We don't know what it is. It's gravity. It's what keeps us on the ground right now. We have no idea. You're like, wait a second, are you sure? Yeah, Einstein didn't prove anything. He's got a theory called relativity, and that's the best idea of what we think gravity is. We don't know what it actually is. We call it a force. Maybe they think it's something in the quantum realm that we can't see. It's invisible. They don't know. Maybe it's a depression of space-time fabric. Who knows? We literally don't know. And yet we have the audacity sometimes to think that it's our party. You know what I mean? The Bible tells us a very simple but profound thing. It's God's creation, not ours. And really believing that, really understanding it, not begrudgingly, not skeptically, not angrily, but really believing it and being okay with that, man, that's the foundation for all of life, but especially the relationships that we have. So let's go on here, as long as we got that in the back of our mind. As we get into day six, I'm going to skip ahead. We understand that Moses wrote this for us, wrote it for Israel, and he wrote it with a purpose. It describes what we call the 6 days of creation, okay? Now, I'm not going to get into whether these are figurative or literal, poetic, you know, actual days. Doesn't really matter here, actually. That's not the point of why he's writing it. So let's not get caught up in the details. Christians like to argue about those kinds of silly things when they miss the whole point of the passage. And the point is that we see God create everything, and then he creates humans. And that's the point. So let's read this together in verse 24. God said, "Let the earth produce every sort of animal, each producing offspring of the same kind, livestock, small animals that scurry along the ground, and wild animals." And that is what happened. God made all sorts of wild animals, livestock, and small animals, each able to produce offspring of the same kind, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, here we go. See, it's all been building to this. Verse 26, then God said, "Let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, the livestock and all the wild animals on the earth and the small animals that scurry along the ground." So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. That was the climactic moment. This is the point of the text. Verse 28. But then God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and all the animals that scurry along the ground." Then God said, "Look, I've given you every seed-bearing plant throughout the earth and all the fruit trees for your food. And I've given every green plant as food for all the wild animals, the birds in the sky and the small animals that scurry along the ground, everything that has life." And that is what happened. And then God looked over all he had made and he saw that it was very good. And evening passed and morning came, marking the sixth day. So that ends the chapter one of Genesis there. But you can see the grand overarching narrative that occurs. We have days 1 through 5, and it's all building to the culmination of this one part, verses 26 and 27, where we see him create human beings in his image. That's the point. The point isn't to tell us whether it was literal days, how the universe was formed. Doesn't matter. The point is to tell us that God created everything with his purposes, but he created humans as special in that so that we understand our purpose. Why do we exist? And he says it's to be his representatives to the rest of creation, to be his ambassadors, his stewards, to steward the created order around us. We're created with diversity that's built in. We see here male and female, so automatically we're in relationship with one another, and we'll get there in the series. But to represent him fully and appropriately together, male and female, we have to first understand that he has given us a purpose. We exist to be like him and to be in a relationship with him. Yeah, we're to be fruitful, multiply, govern the earth, you know, which corresponds to being fruitful, fill it up, which corresponds to multiplication. And there are things that we will do, okay? We'll get there next week in our relationship that we talk about next week, what we do as humans. But to begin with here, we need to see something very special. God made us for a relationship with himself first. That's what we see. So you can write this down. We as humans are made for a relationship with God first. Full stop. Full stop. That's the big picture here. That's the big point. We're made for God, by God, and the relationship that we have with him is tantamount to our existence and why we exist, our purpose. It's to know and be known by him to begin with, nothing else. Cue the saying that you're a human being before you're a human doing. God has created you to be with him in a personal relationship. We don't have to go any further. Again, you'll live that out. It will play itself out in certain ways. But this may be one of the biggest things that sets Christianity apart from almost every other religion or worldview that's out there. You don't have to do anything for God to love you. God wants a relationship with you right now. You're made to be with and experience him forever. That's what Christianity, that's what the Bible teaches us here. God is so personal that Jesus will tell us to call him what? Father, right? He's a good father who wants to know and be known by his children. That's pretty special. It's not like he needed us. He didn't need us to take care of the other animals and the other creation around us. It's not why he created us. He created us to know us and so that we can know him for relationship. So let me just ask you this. What's your relationship with God look like today? What does it look like? Let's just do a little bit of reflection. What does your relationship with God look like today? Is it shallow? Is it based on religion, where it's about what you do? Do you feel guilty and ashamed, like you're not good enough? Do you feel frustrated and angry with God? Or do you even want a relationship with him at all? Maybe you don't have one. Maybe you've deconstructed your faith over the last couple of years, like everybody else seems to be doing in the culture. And you're struggling to understand why it actually matters to your life or why God would create you or create anything. Maybe he doesn't exist at all. Let me just take two extreme responses here, and I want to respond to both of these things. Maybe in the first camp, you're just indignant and you scoff at the question because when I ask it, you're like, that's ridiculous. God doesn't exist. I can't believe in a God that would, you know, allow pain in the world or allow me to suffer. Things haven't gone the way that I want them to go. Whatever the case is, maybe you're angry. Maybe you're an atheist. You don't believe in a personal God at all. Or maybe you think you've come up with a better concept of God than what you believe the Bible or Christianity teaches us or any other world religion. That's actually the way that most people are going today. I hope you realize that. There's not a lot of atheists out there. There are some, but in our culture, the more popular thing now is to redefine spirituality for yourself. How do you define God? What's your truth, right? We've heard that, haven't we? You redefine the idea of deity, the idea of God. I just came across a podcast this week. I'd never heard of this guy, George Jenko. I don't know if you know who he is or not. He's a young guy. I'm not even sure what he does. He has a podcast, though, and he has people on there. He had a comedian named Pete Holmes, who I had come across before, and that's what stopped me. And on the show, they were talking about who God is to George and to Pete. George is a Christian. Pete's not anymore. He used to be, grew up as a Christian, but he's not any longer. And now he's got his own take on God, and he was explaining that to George. And that's a good thing for George to do, right? That's what we're supposed to do. We need to listen with intentionality. We talked about this last week. Michael gave us the BLESS model. Listen with intentionality is one of those kinds of things that we need to do. We need to listen to where other people are coming from. We need to hear their perspective, hear their truth, if you want to put it that way, and understand their relationship with God first. That's what we want to do. And that's what George was doing. So great job. But it's really interesting that as they were going back and forth on this, it's so interesting to me that Pete described this idea of like being one with the universe and having and knowing and being known by just the idea of knowing something is just the beauty and the miracle. And you don't have to worry. You're shackled by religion, but man, I'm free from all of that because I have this greater knowledge of the connectedness in the universe. And as George kind of pushed him, like, well, where are you getting these ideas from? Like, where did this come from? Ironically, Pete went, well, I took mushrooms. And I don't know about you, but that's funny to me, okay? It's very ironic. He took a psychedelic in order to know the universe more fully and understand the very foundations of the fabric of reality, okay? So it's very interesting that he's going to trust hallucinogens, you know, and in a hallucinogenic state, he's going to trust that more than he's going to trust relationships with other people who might know God, the Bible that we have historically that tells us who God is. But the irony is that he's creating God for himself, and he's saying things like, just the idea of knowing is the miracle. The very fact that we can know, it's not about who we might know. Everybody can know who they want to know, but it's the knowing that's beautiful. It would be like me saying, you know what? Being married is so great, and it's just the knowing. I don't care really about my wife and who she is, but just the fact that I get to know someone at all or just know anything, you know? Doesn't matter about her, but it's just the knowing part of the marriage that's beautiful to me. I don't know. Does that sound narcissistic to you guys like it does to me? Does that sound self-centered and selfish like it does to me when I hear that? It's all about him. And he takes the personal knowing of a personal God out of the entire equation. He wants to know without the one who is known. How can you do that? It's just the irony of it to me is just so sad. Because he's just like so confident talking about this. And I'm like, man, I don't mean to make fun of him or make light of it. It's a tragedy to me. But the irony that he can't even see it. Problem is, he wants to be known without the one who knows and is known. And that's the fundamental problem we all have as human beings. This is it. You can write this down. The problem is we all try to gain knowledge without God. That is the fundamental problem of human nature. And listen, I don't just mean informational knowledge, okay? Not just like what you read in a book, not just info about who this God is, but experiential knowledge, relational knowledge. Like Pete said, he wants to know and be known without God because God automatically implies some authority that we don't want over our lives. We don't want to have to lay ourselves down. We want all of the benefit without any of the sacrifice. But relationships require sacrifice, including a relationship with God first. But it all stems from the story from Genesis 3, which we'll get to in a few weeks in depth. But you guys probably all know the story from Genesis 3, the fall. The woman saw the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. She was tempted by the adversary. She took it, she ate it, she gave it to the man who also ate it, and their eyes were opened to good and evil. And it caused shame and guilt, and it ultimately caused God to have to distance himself relationally. So the problem wasn't the knowledge of morality that they gained. The problem was how they gained it, and they gained it apart from knowing God. That's the problem. They gained the knowledge without the relationship that God wanted for them. So we have to come to a place where we can admit that we have a need and see the need that we have for God because he's created us with a purpose of knowing him personally, and everything in our lives where we distance ourselves from him relationally gets twisted up. It causes anxiety and frustration because we're not in control. If we could simply trust God and enter into a relationship with him, he'll fix all of that for us at some level, in some way. I'm not saying our lives will be, you know, all roses, but the relationship is the key factor here. Let me just address the opposite end of the spectrum, though. Maybe on the one side, you're frustrated and you're angry at God, and that's where you are. But maybe on the other side, you feel bad about yourself, and you feel lonely and isolated all the time. You feel guilty. When I ask the question, how's your relationship with God today? You go, well, it's not as good as it should be, you know? And you just feel ashamed, and you feel down, and you feel guilty. Do you struggle in your relationship with God because you don't realize how deeply he loves you? Do you not realize his deep fatherly affection for us? Oftentimes we feel guilty because we've either forgotten the gospel or we've never experienced it in the first place. Maybe it's because you had a father who was harsh. Maybe you're taking those attributes of your earthly parents and you're putting them on to God. Maybe your father was absent and he wasn't in the home at all, or maybe he was emotionally absent, or maybe he was harsh, or maybe he got frustrated with you and was disappointed with you all the time. Maybe those are the attributes you're placing onto God. Do you feel like he's disappointed and frustrated? Do you feel like he's always looking down his nose at you? Do you feel always ashamed in God's presence? I heard a clip from an actor, Terry Crews. He's the man, right? Terry Crews, the most muscular, chiseled man that you've ever seen. But he was talking about something very important to him. He was talking about his former addiction to pornography. And I thought it was really deep. It caused him and his wife of 20 years to separate. I didn't realize this. It created a lot of guilt and shame in him. And he said he just talked down to himself all the time. He always told himself he was trash. He always spoke negatively to himself and just looked at himself as a terrible, terrible person. Because of this addiction, because of what it caused in his life, he was always so ashamed, and he spoke to himself that way until his perspective changed one day. He said that he found a picture of himself at 6 years old, and he looked at that picture of him as a six-year-old boy who was innocent. He hadn't been tempted and, you know, chewed up and spit out by the world yet, and he said seeing himself as that little boy again made him change his entire perspective because that little boy didn't know any of this kind of stuff. He could go back to being that little boy he believed. And he said when he believed that, it changed everything for him. And I'm not sure about his view on God. I don't know Terry Crews' spirituality. I have no idea. But if you think about it that way, that's right. That is a Christian perspective. Because as long as you know God sees you as that six-year-old boy who's innocent, that's what changes everything for you. God sees you as his good child, and when you put your faith in Jesus, he sees you as innocent forever. Because here's the beauty of the good news that we believe. Jesus came to us so that we could come to the Father. Jesus came to us so that we could come to the Father. Jesus saved us and made a way for us to be in relationship with God, the relationship that we've been created for, that we exist for. So when God sees us now, he sees us through the lens of his perfect Son. And now when he looks at you or looks at me, he sees an innocent child, an innocent son or daughter, because he sees us through Jesus. I know I just talked about this a month or so ago, but if you weren't here, this will be helpful. But I just think it's so worth us meditating on as a church. Maybe I need to hear this over and over, and that's why it's in my mind. But if you recall, Jesus told a parable of the prodigal son is what it's called. There was two brothers, and a younger brother and an older brother, and the younger brother wanted the inheritance for himself, and so he didn't want to wait for his father to die. He told his father he wanted it now so that he could go live extravagantly, luxuriously, prostitution, licentiousness, lawlessness, all of those things. I mean, in effect, he was telling his dad he didn't want the relationship with his father. He wanted all of his wealth instead. He just wanted all the benefit without the relationship. And his father was so gracious, he gave him his inheritance anyway. And the younger son went and squandered it. He spent it all, as you would, in that kind of lifestyle. Came to nothing, but then a famine hit the land, and it got even worse. And the younger son couldn't make ends meet. So he ended up serving pigs slop and thinking, man, he was so hungry. He was starving. He had an aha moment at his lowest when he'd hit rock bottom, if you recall the story, right? He said, hey, my father's servants have more to eat. I know my father treats his servants better than this. Maybe if I just go back to be a servant, my father will take me so I can serve him and pay off my debt for the rest of my life. And so he starts heading home, and what happens? The father sees him from far off. How can you see somebody from far off? It's because you've been waiting on them. You've been looking for them. His father's been waiting for him, looking for him, and he runs out to his son. He runs to him, embraces him with open arms. And of course, yeah, his son is broken and says, I want to come back and be a servant. He's like, no, I won't hear of it. He puts his cape on him, his robe. He puts his ring on him. Brings him home as a son, not as a servant, right? And he's so overjoyed that he throws a party. He wants everybody to know that he's regained his lost son. That's not the point of the parable, though, is it? Because we can't forget there's an older brother. The parable goes back to the older brother. What's wrong with him? He's resentful. He's angry that his father would show mercy and grace to the son that squandered everything. So his father comes out to him, just like he did for his younger son. And he says, son, what's the problem? He says, Dad, I've been working for you this whole time. I earned all of the stuff that younger son is getting. Why would you give him this? He said, son, I've regained a lost son. We need to celebrate this. But the older brother was resentful of the mercy God showed. The point of the parable wasn't just for Jesus to point out the hypocrisy of the religious leaders. That's who he told the parable to show them that they were the older brother. It wasn't just to point that out. The point of the parable was to say that Jesus is the better older brother. He didn't resent us. He actually came out and grabbed us so that we would come back home to the Father. We didn't just have an aha moment on our own. Jesus came to us. He came into the world, into space and time, so that we could know God. And he brought us to the Father. And he died for us in our place and paid the debt that we owe. That's the good news of the gospel that we believe as Christians. It's the grace of God. He lived a perfect life as a son that you and I should live but never will. He was perfectly obedient, perfectly loving, perfectly in a relationship with God. But unlike the older brother in the parable, he didn't resent us when he died in our place. He was the better older brother so that he could save us from death and hell. Not only do we have a father who wants a relationship with us, guys, but we have an older brother who died to give us a relationship with God. But then Jesus rose from the dead so that one day we can be raised from the dead too and spend all eternity in a relationship with him forever. That's what we're heading toward. It starts with a relationship with God. That's the foundation of all other relationships, but it ends with a relationship with God, and it ends with the relationship that we have with the family of God. If you believe that, it will change everything for you. When you know God's absolute love for you, you believe that he values you so much that all of human history is geared toward him saving you and bringing you back into the family, man, that's going to change how you feel about yourself and how you feel about others. It's going to change everything, including your relationships. Our relationship with God is the foundation of our relationship with others. So let me just give you guys a few points of application here before we end our time. Let's go back to the earlier question. What's your relationship with God like today? What is your relationship with God like? Maybe for you, you came in already growing deeper in your relationship with Him. Man, good for you. That's an encouragement. I hope this has been an encouragement for you to remember who God is to you, a good Father, and that He wants a relationship with you first, and that you are a human being, not a human doing. I hope you'll continue to draw closer to God over time. But if you came in here dry, weary, frustrated, anxious, lonely, maybe struggling to feel like anybody cares about you, or struggling in your relationships with your friends or family or coworkers, struggling with resentment, struggling to forgive, let me ask you this. What are you doing to deepen your relationship with God first? Because if our relationship with God is the foundation of our relationship with others, then what are you doing to deepen your relationship with God? Maybe you're struggling in all these other areas of your life because you don't have a relationship with God first. Maybe you're not building that relationship first. That's the most important one. It's not something you can just set and forget where you just go like, man, I believe, okay, next thing, let's go on. No, you wouldn't do that with any other meaningful relationship in your life, right? You can imagine what it would be like as a father if I went for months or weeks or years without talking to my children or without talking to my wife. We wouldn't have a great relationship, would we? So, yet so many of us do that with God. We go long stretches without ever connecting, wondering why we feel alone, wondering why we can't maintain meaningful relationships in other areas of our lives because we haven't started in the right place. God's work to initiate and cultivate a relationship with us in the gospel by sending His own Son into the world. Now we're free to cultivate that relationship back with Him. And if you're wondering how, we just finished a series in Titus where we highlighted five spiritual practices that help deepen our faith over time. It helps deepen our intimacy with God over time. So as I begin to close out our time together, Alex, you can go ahead and come up if you want to start playing. We'll get ready to close here and respond in just a moment. But let me give you these five practices that will help you grow closer to God. And you're like, man, we've heard this. Hey, are you doing them though? Why do you think we keep bringing them up? We need to do these things if we want to grow closer to Jesus in our relationship. Gospel, gather, groups, give, and go. We highlighted each one of those in our series over the last 5 weeks. You can go back and listen to them if you weren't here. We get them from Acts chapter 2, but we also saw them very clearly in Titus. We have to always start with the gospel and meditate on the gospel, what God has done for us. Spend time praying, spend time studying the word, learn theology to let it grow us deeper into the gospel. Learn all of these things, but we can't stop there. And I think that's where many Christians go. Well, if I could just read the Bible more. Okay, that's great, but it's not just doing that. It's also gathering with other believers on Sundays like this so that we can sharpen one another, learn the Bible, learn how to read the Bible ourselves. It's also grouping together throughout the week and being in community with one another, sharpening one another in that way. Doing life together, we might say. But it's also giving, learning to give your time, talent, and treasure. Why? Because that creates dependence on God. You're not going to get to know God more if you don't depend on Him more. Then also it's going to others with the gospel, giving your faith away. Doing it in our community, to the ends of the earth. Practicing these things aren't the ends in and of themselves, but they help us foster a relationship with God, which is the end that we're striving for, right? Knowing and being known by Him more intimately is the end. It's like me doing this with my wife as a good example. Maybe I make time to talk to her and listen to her every day. Maybe I make time to go on dates with her and spend time together. We do life together every day. We strategize for our family together. We make sure to give each other gifts when it's an appropriate time to give gifts on special occasions. We tell other people about each other. I love talking up my wife to other people because she's awesome. Imagine if I didn't do any of those things. If I didn't do any of those things, I probably wouldn't have a great relationship with my wife. But imagine if I just looked at those things as ends in themselves. I still probably wouldn't have a great relationship with my wife because it would be about, I got to make sure I get the gift. The gift, getting the gift is more important than the one I'm giving it to. No, we can't look at it like that. So we got to find the balance here for us guys in these spiritual practices and recognize it's to deepen our relationship with God, which is what we're made for. Our relationship with others though will also deepen because our relationship with God is deepening. Because when you're struggling to relate to other people well, maybe you're short with them, you're sharp in your tongue, maybe you get angry easily. Maybe you struggle to forgive people, struggle to reconcile, or maybe you crave people's approval. And you crave intimacy with people so much because you put so much stock in a relationship with them. Whatever it might be for you, there's something not right on the foundational level that you have with God in your relationship, if that's what's going on in your relationships with people. If you're struggling in ways with people, then you might go back to the foundation. Make sure you're not struggling with God first, because our relationship with God is the foundation of our relationship with others. So start there if you need to. And listen, maybe for you, you are growing closer to Jesus. And I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad that's your story. Maybe for others of you that are struggling in here today, you need to start laying it all down. Maybe that's the first thing you need to do today, is you need to come up front and pray. We have a prayer time after as a response, as a form of response. We call this a symbolic altar up here. There's nothing special about it, but there's something about you physically getting up and taking actual steps to respond to God in prayer that I think is very meaningful and important. You know, for us to physically respond. So maybe you need to physically come up front and pray and ask God to heal the relationship that you have with him. Maybe that's the first thing you need to do. Listen, if you've just believed in God for the first time, maybe you need to take the first step of obedience we call baptism. Maybe if you've never been baptized as a believer and made your faith public and made an announcement that you have a relationship with God, you need to do that. We're actually going to be baptizing here next week. And so if you want to get baptized, now's your time. Baptism is kind of a symbolic ceremony for following Jesus. You know, I've used marriage a few times here in this sermon, so let me just use it one more time. It's a lot like a marriage ceremony. You know, I don't know when I fell in love with my wife. I don't know exactly. I mean, I know when we first met and all of that, but I don't really remember when it was that I wanted to get married to her, and she doesn't remember that with me. But what I do remember is that we got married one day. And we had a ceremony to mark that day. It's a very special day, right? And from that point on, we're married. And that's literally what baptism is like. Well, it's figuratively. I used the word wrong, right? That's what baptism is. It's a symbol. We're like, man, I don't know exactly when I believed, perhaps. Maybe that's your story. But I do know the day I was baptized. And from that point on, I followed Jesus for the rest of my life. I have a relationship with him, and I declare that to the world. That's what baptism is, and that's why Jesus commands us to do it as his followers. So listen, if you've never been baptized as a believer, you need to take that step of obedience next week when we're baptizing. And listen, if you were an infant when you were baptized, or you baptized at a young age, and you really don't think it was your faith, I applaud your parents for encouraging you to grow in the faith in that way. That was your parents' faith, if that's the case, and that's a beautiful thing. But I want to encourage you, if you've believed for the first time, to take that step of obedience for yourself, because we believe that to be baptized, you should be a believer yourself. It's to celebrate your belief. And if you're self-conscious about being baptized in front of the church for any reason, and I don't want to be harsh. This may sound harsh. I don't mean to sound harsh. But Jesus does say if we're ashamed of him, he's going to be ashamed of us on the day of judgment. You don't want to be ashamed. You don't want to start your relationship with Jesus by being ashamed of him. Man, be proud of that. Be excited for it because you've been radically changed in your heart. Take that step of obedience today if something is different about your life now because he's entered in. Whether we love the idea of baptism or not, it's a command Jesus gave to his followers. So if you're ready to get baptized, we have cards on the seats there for you to fill out today if you want to do that so that we can follow up with you this week and talk to you about that. Really encourage you to fill out that card and drop it in one of the buckets on the way out. You can come and talk to our prayer counselors up front. They'd love to pray with you about it as well and talk you through that. So if you're ready to get baptized, take that step. But for the rest of us here who follow Jesus already as baptized believers, let's go ahead and respond now where we not only may need to pray and ask God to heal our relationship with him, but we also want to respond through practicing obedience as Jesus followers already through communion. We do this every week to respond where we believe that this is kind of like baptism is the first time for a believer. This is the ongoing symbol for believers who follow Jesus to say, I am identifying with him in his death and resurrection, and I'm believing that it applies to my life. I believe the gospel. That's really what this symbol means. I believe what Jesus has done for me. And I want to respond to him in obedience this week and follow him with the rest of my life. So if you're willing to take the symbol like that with us today, you're welcome to. Even if you're new with us, you're welcome to take this with us if you believe. If you don't believe, man, we'd ask that you just let this pass you by. Don't come up and get this, but man, believe in Jesus. Trust in who he is for you. See this as a really special moment for you to like connect with God, you know? But over the next few minutes, if you want to come up and get your elements, hold them at your seat, I'll lead us in taking this together. But let's just respond. Let's just spend a few moments responding. I'm going to pray and then let that trigger your response. God, I just ask that today we have a little bit of a heavy message in some sense, where we just really have to do some work with our relationship with you. Is it as good as we think, or could it be better? I'm sure it could always be better, but Jesus has made us right with you, God. Thank you. There's nothing we can do to make ourselves more right with you than you've already made us in Jesus. Praise your name for the gospel. You are worthy of our praise, God. You're such a good father for sending your son into the world. And Jesus, you are such a good son for not only obeying the Father, but you're such a good older brother who went first in death and resurrection for us. And God, I pray that all of this room will respond to that in a meaningful way today. Help us not to leave this place the same as when we came in, God. Help us to remember who we are in Christ, to remember our true identity as a son or a daughter of the King. God, I also pray for those in this room who may not believe yet. Please, God, break down those barriers, break down those walls. Help them to see that Christianity is not a religion, but it's a relationship. And God, I pray that they'll believe that and see it for what it really is. God, I pray that we will all do that today, but I pray that especially for those who may not believe. And I pray, God, for those who've just believed recently over the last couple of weeks or months, God, I pray that they will put their faith in you in a fresh way by getting baptized next week. Father, please call people all over the place to that here in our church. I'm just so thankful for what you've done in my life personally. And God, I pray that today we'll respond to you in a very deep and meaningful way. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks so much for listening with us today. We hope that it was an encouragement to you. But you know, we don't see this as a replacement for gathering with other believers in a local church context. So if you don't have a local church, we would encourage you to plug in with one wherever you are. And if you're in Roanoke, Virginia, we'd love to invite you to plug in with us here at Redemption Church. And you're welcome anytime to gather with us. But you can check us out online at our website, redemptionroanoke.com. You can look for other content or resources there. But thanks again for listening.